like to call this Council and Committee meeting to order. Madam Clerk, the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of Council are present.
A couple of addenda this evening. One has to do with presentation and delegation of Scott Ross from the group managing, he's the group managing editor, and Tracy Travis Scott, circulation manager of Niagara this week. That same addendum also makes reference to the report of Niagara Solar Power Company Limited. That's PDS 98-2016. Second addendum had to do with another delegation with respect to the bill distribution, and that is Justin McDonald of the Fort Erie Times. Just very brief announcements. I attended with my wife the Christmas in Mexico event for community living on Saturday, and it's the third big event that's taken place in this community that has had unbelievable attendance. It was very successful, and people were talking about it, have been talking about it since then. That, the Chamber of Commerce Black Cat Gala, and the Red Ribbon Art exhibit all have been fantastic events that have taken place recently, and as I said, large increase in attendance and in community support from sponsors and donors, and they've all done very well. So it was nice to be able to see those folks there. Are there any disclosures of pecuniary interest? Madam Clerk, I have a disclosure with respect to item 2.6 in the November 9th, 2016 minutes of the Land Committee, which is part of report CAO-13/LC-14 for 2006. So when we get to that, I will ask that item be separated from the recommendations in that report. There are no others. We have a number of public meetings coming up for December the 5th. But we'll start with the budget meeting schedule. Next budget meeting, December 7th, 2016, that is water and wastewater operating budget. Wednesday, January the 11th, 2017, Library and EDTC will be presenting their budgets to us. Wednesday, January 25th is the general levy operating budget and assessment analysis. And Wednesday, February 1st, 2017, if necessary. The budget meetings all begin at 6 p.m. They're held in the Town Hall Council Chambers, and we are targeting adoption of the budget bylaw for the capital budget on December the 5th, 2016. Be right. That's a committee meeting, so it must be December the 12th. Water, wastewater on January 16th, and the general levy budget bylaw on February 27th. Upcoming public meetings with respect to the draft plan of subdivision revision of property is that, Mr. He's over there, Mr. Brady. You've shifted over to the right. Which plan of subdivision revision is that? I'm looking at item B under public notices of meetings.
The King Street one, sir? Is that the one you're looking
King
at?
King Street, yes. Okay, right. So that's the one near the County Fair Mall. Then we've got the, that meeting takes place December the 5th, 2016 at 6 p.m. Information report for that will be available November the 30th on our town website. Next public meeting is initiated amendment to the official plan and zoning bylaw for the downtown residential parking strategy. Again, that's December the 5th, 2016 at 6 p.m. in the Town Hall Council Chambers. Information report available November 30th. Next public meeting is a draft plan of subdivision, official plan amendment and zoning bylaw amendment for the Fort Erie Hills proposed subdivision. And that, again, is December 5th, 2016 in the Council Chambers. Information report available November the 30th. Final public meeting on this agenda is the draft plan of condominium revision for the Dominion Road Prospect Point plan of condominium. And that again is December the 5th, 2016. Information report November the 30th. We have a public meeting this evening, and that relates to the town-initiated Crystal Beach infill situation, proposed amendments to change the zoning of certain properties in the core area. This is a public meeting, and we will ask Mr. Kernahan of the staff to provide some background information, and then if there's anyone from the public who wishes to address council on the proposed amendment, we will ask them to come forward. Evening, Mr. Kernahan.
Evening, Your Worship. Thank you. On August 8th, 2016, Council initiated a zoning bylaw amendment which was designed to protect existing residential uses from the impacts of residential development in Crystal Beach. The purpose of the amendment is to address public opposition to certain committee of adjustment applications to permit residential development in the established area of Crystal Beach. Notice of this public meeting was provided in accordance with the Planning Act by placing an ad in the October 27th, 2016 edition of the Times newspaper. In addition, all 1,180 property owners that would be affected by this amendment were mailed a personalized letter notifying of them of the amendment and the public information meeting. Notice of the public information meeting was also posted at the library and museum branches, on the billboard at the corner of Municipal Center Drive and Garrison Road, at town facilities, and was sent to business improvement associations. This map shows the properties that are proposed to be rezoned as a consequence of this amendment. These properties are the residential properties in Crystal Beach that were developed by historic draft plans of subdivision. The properties are made up of smaller lots that are typically between 35 and 45 feet wide and around 85 feet deep. These properties are all zoned residential 2R2 zone at present, which permits single detached dwellings and accessory apartments. The built form in this area of Crystal Beach has historically been one story with some 1.5 story dwellings. Lot frontages in areas of these lots are significantly smaller than the zoning regulations for the R2 zone would permit today. However, many of these lots were developed prior to a zoning bylaw being in place in Crystal Beach. Proposed amendment would rezone the properties shown on this map from residential 2R2 zone to a new zone, which is entitled residential 2B R2B zone. This slide shows the existing zoning regulations for the R2 zone compared to the proposed regulations of the R2B zone. The proposed regulations would include new rules for the minimum lot frontage and lot area, front and rear yards, maximum building coverage, and the maximum building heights for smaller lots. In all cases, except for the maximum height, the proposed regulations are more permissive than the existing regulations. The reason for this is to make it easier to develop on these smaller lots in a way that is consistent with the Crystal Beach neighborhood without the need for a minor variance. The maximum building height is proposed to be reduced to 1.5 stories and 7.5 meters, or 1 story and 6 meters in the R2B zone, whereas the R2 zone permits 2.5 stories and a maximum height of 9 meters. The reason for this reduced height is to reduce the massing impacts of new houses on neighboring properties in the established neighborhood. This is a graphic demonstration of how a house with an attached garage would be situated on a lot that is zoned R2 zone, shown on the left, compared to a lot zoned R2B, which is depicted by the two graphics on the right. Both dwellings would be permitted 3 meters from the front lot line, except 6 meters from the garage to the front lot line. Both dwellings would be permitted to have smaller rear yards than is currently permitted and would be allowed to occupy a higher proportion of the lot. There would be no change to the side yard setbacks. New R2B zone would have it that the regulations of the R2 zone would continue to apply on larger lots with 15 meters or more of frontage. Slide shows the same comparison as the previous slide, except that it shows how a dwelling without an attached garage would be situated on a lot zoned R2B. The only difference is that a 3 meter setback is required on one side of that dwelling. This slide shows some dwellings on smaller lots that meet the proposed R2B regulations on the left, and dwellings on smaller lots that meet the R2 regulations on the right. In both cases, these infill dwellings were constructed adjacent to a traditional one-story cottage-style dwelling. While the dwellings on the left are still significantly taller than the cottage dwellings they are adjacent to, they are more compatible with the existing built form than the dwellings on the right. The intent of the proposed zoning change is to encourage development form, which is similar to the dwellings on the left. The slide shows the timeline of the proposed zoning change, beginning with the notice of the public information meeting. It's anticipated that a recommendation report will be brought before council early in the new year on this file. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kernahan. Do any members of council have any questions of Mr. Kernahan? Thank you very much, sir. Does anyone in the audience wish to address council with respect to the this proposed zoning amendment? Please come forward, Mr. White, and provide the provide us with your full name and address.
D. White, 1891 9 Road. Just a very quick comment that I have had some experience with these type of infill guidelines and regulations in the past, particularly in the city of St. Catharines, and would encourage you to adopt this. It will be very supportive and reduce burden on town staff as well for dealing with minor variances and those types of issues, while also allowing increased flexibility on behalf of developers and residents who just want to make minor changes.
Great. Thank you very much. Any members of council have any questions of Mr. White? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who wishes to address council with respect to this proposed planning amendment? If not, then I'll declare this public meeting closed, and we will deal with the information report later on in the agenda. That takes us to the consent agenda items. Does anyone wish any items removed from the package? Councillor McDermott.
Yes, Your Worship. PDS 93-2016.
Thank you. Are there any others that anyone wishes? That's the one with respect to the Gilmore Road road allowance. Any others? If not, then I'll entertain a motion to move the consent agenda package as amended. Councillor Zanko. Any questions? Yes, or comments? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to say to Mr. Walsh that with respect to IS 44-2016 and the three-way stop, I received a lot of phone calls from constituents wanting to extend my thanks to you and your team for doing that for them, putting in the three-way stop. And also, received some phone calls today with respect to the two-way street for Courtright Street, two-way lane opening up, and we're thankful for that as well. So wanted to pass that along to you. It's certainly a long time coming, and I know it'll be beneficial.
Questions or comments? Mr. Walsh, just to follow up on that, so the community is aware the Central Avenue Bridge is now completed and all the road work with the exception of the west side of Courtright has been completed and opened. In the event, because I went up and down Courtright a couple of times just to do a right-hand turn onto Central Avenue going west, in the event that turns out to be problematic because the sight line really isn't that good, there's brick wall that is part of the bridge construction makes it quite difficult, and you have to creep out in order to get a good look at what's coming over the bridge. In the event that becomes problematic, what kind of things might the municipality consider for safety reasons? I'm thinking maybe a flashing light, or I think it would be very difficult if we were to put traffic signals there because Jarvis Street is so close. Any thoughts on that, Mr. Walsh?
We could look into making it a right-in, right-out only. We could always turn it back to a one-way egress. With respect to traffic signals, it is under the jurisdiction of the region, and the traffic volume at that intersection likely doesn't warrant signals. We'd have to see if there were traffic incidents. We'd have to see what type of incidents they are before we could form a definite conclusion. But right now it's just wait and observe, like it is with any change in traffic patterns.
Right. I think it probably will work, and I agree with Councillor Butler that it's really quite interesting to be able to drive up the road that you couldn't do really for much of our lifetime, probably all of our driving lifetime. So that's quite interesting. And I think people will probably monitor it themselves, so that I would think that if it becomes difficult, they'll simply take a different route. But yeah, no, the bridge looks fantastic. It's I would think that the Bridgeburg BIA must really be quite pleased with the way it's turned out. I had a question as well, Mr. Walsh, with respect to the Gibson Center plotter and the expanded scope on that. When was that large format copier scheduled to be replaced?
That was in the 2016 capital budget, so this year. And it's IT actually that's leading the charge, but I know the history. So it's supposed to be this replaced this year. And as the report notes, they got a great deal on a different plotter, a demo unit. So we scooped that up. And through the course of our work through the year, the plotter we have upstairs, or the scanner we have upstairs, has hit the wall a couple of times with increasing frequency and consequences.
So this just authorizes the purchase of something we're going to do in any event.
It would have been in the 2017 capital program,
right?
Otherwise, yeah.
Right. Okay, and then I just had, with respect to report CS25-2016, the third quarter financial report, I had some questions that I'll take up with Mr. Jansen afterwards, just some queries about the allocation of some of the expenditures, but that appears to be a pretty positive report as well. Congratulations, Mr. Jansen, you're doing great. Okay, if there are no other questions, I will call the question on the amended package. All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. Councillor McDermott, with respect to PDS 93, I'd like to put that on the floor.
Yes, Your Worship. I'd like to move that we postpone this to December 5th because of the emails we received today, just to make sure that we're doing this process right.
Okay, so let's put that on the floor, and then if you would put that on the floor, Councillor McDermott, then you can move to postpone it to December the 5th. So first we'll put it on the floor. Okay. And then you're moving to postpone to December the 5th. Does anyone have any questions with respect to the timing of that? Are all in favor of the postponement? Opposed, that is carried. That concludes the consent agenda, and that takes us then to infrastructure services. And I'll hand the chair over to Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Infrastructure Services is now in session, and we do have a delegation this evening. I would like to call Sean, and I don't know if I'm going to be pronouncing your last name properly, but I'm going to give it a try. Galbraith?
Correct.
Excellent. Please state your name and address.
Sean Galbraith. I'm with SJSB Network Consulting, a consultant for Bell. My address is 1 Yonge Street in Toronto.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to meet and speak with you tonight and answer any questions you have about Bell's new rollout of small cell technology. We'll have a little overview of the project and sort of why it's needed. Basically, we are trying to keep up with the demand for data usage on our wireless networks. In the next few years, traffic is projected to increase about 900%, and that's everything from using devices for streaming Netflix videos and Facebook and video. In trying to keep up with that overflow of demand on a network that was never really designed to be data intensive, we have to find new ways to deploy more bandwidth and more antennas in more areas. And small cell is a way to sort of do that. What is small cell? It's instead of a traditional tall cell tower, which covers a large area broadly, Small cell allows the network engineers to sort of fine-tune the network in areas that have higher population or higher concentration of users. So we can put more small antennas and distribute the load over a larger geographic area. So instead of a tall cell tower covering 4 kilometers or so, we would have small cell, which are basically about, you know, about a footish squared, you know, about that thick, mounted to telephone poles or on the sides of buildings, and they would cover 150 meters instead. And we would distribute a number of those in a given area to make up the difference. And it allows us to really fine-tune the network and respond to where there are maybe surges in populations in terms of special events or weekend tourism areas that we wouldn't be able to do with a single large tower. And it also allows us to deploy antennas that are much less visually offensive than a giant tower in the middle of downtown, which wants. But we still have to get that service where it needs to go, and this is a way of doing it. I'm not sure, up on the screen. On the screen, you can see the sort of the dimensions of what a small cell box is. And then we also have another technology called PicoCell, which is essentially like a large smoke detector size antenna. And PicoCell goes inside of buildings. Small cell goes outside. Here, it basically just mounts to the side of a light pole or to the side of a building. And here's a before and after. You might have to almost look close because it is really, the visual impact is quite minimal. And that would provide, again, coverage for about 150 meters or so radius. And then so in a downtown, we would just have maybe 2 or 3 light posts, something like that. They can also be mounted on the side of a building and painted so that you know it blends in quite a bit. Or sometimes we have to mount them on basically on posts above a building, depending on how tall a building is and what the exposure levels are, things like that. But also, again, it's still a fairly minimal visual footprint. That's it for my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Mr. Galbraith. Does any members of council have any questions? Councilor Butler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Galbraith. What's the feedback from the public?
This is pretty new. Frankly, we haven't rolled it out in too many places right now, so we haven't gotten a lot of feedback. If I would speculate, I would say that there's an appreciation that we're not building another ugly cell tower next to someone's house. And if we do it, basically if we do our job right, people don't even notice that it's there because it's just another piece of street infrastructure. It's designed to be inoffensive and to blend in with the urban environment.
Question. Is this something that you need permission from municipalities to be able to erect?
Yeah, so we're looking to basically partner with municipalities and people who own the infrastructure that we're looking to mount it to. Because we're not going to be going through and building our own poles to put the small cell up, we do need permission from whoever owns the light pole or whoever owns the building that we're going to be attaching it to. And that's sort of what's before you tonight, to enter into a master agreement between Bell and the municipality to allow us to roll it out.
Thank you.
Mayor Redicom?
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Galbraith, for the information. I note that there are 11 sites that small cell technology is going to be introduced to, according to the report that we have on the agenda. And I presume then, and these are mostly areas where there's intense activity at various stages. So as you mentioned, high volume use. And I presume that other areas of the community where we have high periodic high volumes would be future potential sites for this type of technology?
Absolutely. Once we start rolling it out and we get a sense of how it's working, we can then fine-tune and then open it up to other areas. It's not a, this isn't meant to be the definitive list. It's just to get us started, and then we can, once we get it in the community, then we can roll it out possibly even in more areas, more communities.
Great. Thank you. It's pretty exciting.
Are there any additional comments or questions? Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Galbraith, you mentioned the small cells for outside located on light poles, et cetera, and then the pico cells for indoors. At what point does a pico cell become necessary? What's the penetration rate for one of the exterior mounted cells in towards a building?
It's not great. And it would be more, the pico cell would be more for like an arena or a library where, again, you have a concentration of users who are coming in. Each of them, like if we had a small cell located directly outside an arena, might not need to put a pico cell inside as well. But like, for example, if we had just in this area, if there was a small cell out on the street at the back end of the Leisureplex, that small cell is not going to be doing much for it. So we would have a whole separate network inside the Leisureplex to pick up the difference.
Okay. Thank you.
Because of distance and walls.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Are there any additional questions? I don't see any, so thank you very much for your presentation. It was quite interesting.
Thank you.
That brings us to report IS 47, 2016, Transit Advisory Committee Establishment and Terms of Reference. Can I get a mover? Councillor McDermott, that motion is on the floor. Are there any comments or questions? Councillor Butler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a comment, actually. I read this report. It's very well written, and I'm very happy to see the terms. So I'll be supporting this tonight.
Thank you. Mayor Redicott?
Transit Advisory Committee?
Yes, we are.
Okay, excuse me. I was distracted. I've got a few comments. There used to be a transit committee in the town, and I don't know, maybe 25 years ago, somehow it fell into disfavor. So this is, and at that time the transit routes were quite limited. I had some comments or I guess some comments about the committee membership, which I think is prudent to have a rounded group of individuals, some of whom are users of the system, some of whom are not the community members at large. And I would hope that we would get individuals volunteering for this committee who have some experience with respect to hospitality or perhaps some of the businesses that do have employees that would be utilizing this, because that would help us to get an understanding of where route changes might be considered, frequency of routes and what have you. So that I think will take care of itself when we get there. On page 6, the package, which would be maybe page 2 of the report, there was a suggestion, or in this is the terms of reference, that there would be information and guidance. The last item is the 40 Accessibility Advisory Committee member. I would presume it means the committee, because there would be more than just the member who would be commenting on that. So I would think that, and I'd ask maybe some direction from the clerk, that should be the committee as opposed to just a single member.
Mr. Walsh or Madam Clerk, I'm not sure who would want to.
Yes, you're correct, Mr. Mayor, on that. It would be the committee that's commenting, not individual members.
Okay, so that can be altered then without the need for an amendment, or should there be an amendment?
You can note that as a clerical adjustment.
Okay. In terms of the, and then again, in terms of the composition, this is going to be such a large part of our operations as we go forward, and we're going to be expending probably in the neighborhood of 4 or 5% of our budget. I wouldn't even have a problem if there were two members of council as opposed to one member and the mayor, but we'll, I think we should see how that works its way out. What I'm more concerned about, I think, is things like the frequency of the meetings. I don't think that quarterly is adequate. I think we're in a process now where we're looking at expanding the service over the next several years. We're looking at the routes, and we're looking at a new contract possibly next year, so that may involve some tendering. I would think that it would be important for us to have this committee at least initially meet every other month. And I think I'd like to move to amend it so that we have that. And that every other month may not be adequate as we get into a bit more of the planning, because I think there are a lot of aspects and issues to this. And I know that this has mostly been left to the staff, but I do believe that it's going to be more important once we start getting input from community members and committee members, some of the things that we can do and should be contemplating. So I'd like to move an amendment, Madam Clerk, that instead of quarterly, that this be bi-monthly.
Okay, that amendment is on the floor. Are there any comments or questions with regard to the amendment? Seeing none, I will call the question on the motion as amended. All those in favor? That passes.
If I may continue. The on page 7, or which what would be, I think, page 2 of the terms of reference, page 3 of the terms of reference, so it's page 7 of the package, there's a reference to term of appointments. I really don't follow the first sentence of that, save and accept council's appointed liaison to the committee. Well, that's the council member who may be replaced due to elections and or appointments made by council from time to time. All staff and contracted representatives by position are permanent. But the composition of the committee there's a technical advisory committee, but the committee itself, I think, is really the one member of council, the two transit users, what have you. So I wonder if I could get some clarification on that. Is this supposed to be a committee made up of those 8 individuals with advice and support from a technical advisory committee, or how does this envisage that working?
Mr. Walsh, could you clarify for us?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. In this point, or in this paragraph, TAC is the Transit Advisory Committee, so it's the committee itself. And with respect to the length of term, we felt that every couple of terms, we should refresh the membership just to keep the ideas flowing and so as not to grow stale.
I understand that. So the Transit Advisory Committee, but there are no staff members on that Transit Advisory Committee.
That's correct.
So then the paragraph that deals with term of appointments, which makes reference to staff members being permanent, I don't follow that.
Yeah, that, as the clerk points out, that's an oversight on our part. Late in the development of the terms of reference, we removed staff from the actual composition of the committee to be more of guidance, such that all the ideas would come from the public and they wouldn't be led by staff. So the wording in the term of appointments regarding all staff and contracted representatives is an oversight and can be removed.
So, okay, and I would think that would be prudent. I would think that whole first sentence could be removed because appointments are going to be made by the council. And I understand that it's going to be for presumably the term of council. And then there's a limit of no one being able to serve more than two consecutive terms of council. Is that the way this should be read, Mr. Walsh?
That's correct. If you remove the first sentence, save and accept, down to are permanent. So the term of appointment should start with appointed members of the Transit Advisory Committee shall dot, dot, dot.
And then, Madam Chair, I think it should be clear that two consecutive terms means... And then if that's the case, Madam Clerk, what if we end up with someone being appointed partway through a term of council, like we've had on a recent experience? So I wonder if we should simply specify that it shouldn't be more than a number of years.
Madam Clerk.
Through you, Madam Chair. Our interpretation and the rule that we follow with that would apply to whatever length of time their first term was to coincide with the term of council. So even if they came in the third year of a council term, that would be considered their first term. And then if they were sitting for another term of council, that would be considered the second consecutive term.
And that should be specified that it should be no more than two consecutive terms of council or two part. It's got to specify that it can't be just a full term. It's got to be parts of two or more consecutive terms. Two consecutive terms, if you follow my drift.
Through you, Madam Chair, I do follow your drift, and we'll get the wording more clear when the bylaw comes before council.
Perfect. The other thing that So when we get down to reporting structure, which is the next item, since the staff are not members of this committee, I don't know why the Director of Infrastructure Services would be the chair. Was there some thought on that, Madam Chair?
Mr. Walsh?
Again, that's an oversight.
So can we assume that this will be, or when we get this in the bylaw format, this will be the chair of that committee will be elected by the other members of the committee?
That's correct, yes.
And I think that I think that's fine. Thank you. I welcome this. I think it'll be very helpful for us as we move forward.
Okay. Before I go back to Councillor Butler, does any other member who hasn't spoken yet have any questions? Councillor Butler.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just want to go back to the terms, the amount of time that one can sit on the Transit Committee, and I agree it should be two terms. But I'm just wondering, since are we being fair, since this is happening in the middle of our term? And that's the thing that I'm having difficulty with. So by the time we get this committee up and running, and maybe Mr. Walsh can clarify, it'll probably take about three, four months. Yeah. So really we're looking at about a year and a little over half. So would it be fair for us to say anybody that comes on board is kind of a wash this year, but the real terms start at the next election?
Mr. Walsh, do you have any thoughts in that regard?
Mike.
Through you, Madam Chair, I think, as I said, we'll clarify the wording to come back before council, but I think if we just specify two full consecutive terms of council, that will handle that.
Okay. Anything further? Councillor Becerra?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just giving some thought to that. Ultimately, council at the beginning of a term or when vacancies occur, appoint the members to all of our different committees. And I'm just wondering if council at that time can decide when the applications have come in and you see somebody who's already served two terms, do we want to go with that person again or do we want to change it out? I'm just wondering, are we eliminating or decreasing somebody's willingness to participate at the end of two terms. We don't always have a full complement of people coming forward to fill these committees. And just by striking somebody out because they've served two terms, which, you know, in the last number of months, we've had significant number of individuals who've contributed for 10, 15, 20 years and have done so on a very good basis. I'm just wondering if we should strike that all together and just leave it to the appointment process of council to decide who makes it and who doesn't make it.
Does anyone have any comment to that?
I think Councillor Passero should move that so we can vote on it, because I tend to agree.
So I'd like to move that we strike any reference to serving of terms or term limits regarding terms of appointments.
Okay, that amendment is on the floor. Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? That carries. Councillor Passero, did you have anything further? Are there any additional comments? Okay, I'll call the question on the motion as amended. All those in favor? That carries. That brings us to report IS48-2016, Bell Mobility Small Cell Technology Installation Agreement. Can I have a mover? Mayor Redekop? Are there any comments or questions? That motion's on the floor. Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a lot of questions tonight. I just wanted to know if perhaps Mr. Walsh could answer this question for me. All of these installations are basically going to be on Canadian Niagara Power Towers or poles?
Mr. Walsh.
Through you, Madam Chair. No, they're all intended to be on town infrastructure. We have streetlight poles. We have buildings we can mount them on. Just a bit of history between of how this particular report got here. Bell approached us in August and asked us to identify where we had either poor cell coverage or large gathering opportunities, and town infrastructure was present so that they could partner with us on that.
Thank you.
Anything further? Councillor Knott.
Thank you. Through yourself, Madam Chair, to Mr. Walsh, considering that they're all going to be identified as on town assets, Mr. Walsh, are there going to be certain times of the year during certain festivals that we'll be able to offer free Wi-Fi? For example, if they're going to be in Bridgeburg during the Taste of Fort Erie or downtown Ridgeway during the Ridgeway Festival, is there any type of benefit to the citizens in those areas or the festivals with us going forward on this? I mean, the technology is great, and I'm sure it'll improve the signal greatly.
Mr. Walsh?
Through you, Madam Chair. This is an opportunity by a private corporation, so unless Bell is willing to offer anything free, and judging by my last bill, the answer is no. the opportunity for free Wi-Fi would probably emanate from town-installed infrastructure through our IT department.
Are there any additional comments or questions? Seeing none, I will call the question. All those in favor? That motion carries. I know, Councillor Knott, you had an item under new business, and then we'll go to back to you, Mr. Walsh, for the inquiries by members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through yourself to the Director of Infrastructure, Mr. Walsh, I've raised the concerns several times about speed limits on Point Avenue Road on previous occasions, and it was referred to the Traffic Coordinating Committee. The TTC's decision of no change is contrary to the residents of that area. I had brought forward a petition that was signed, and my colleague, Councillor Zenko, was good enough to bring it to the TTC. My question is, are we bound by the decisions of the TTC, or can I pursue a speed limit change as a notice of motion?
Mr. Walsh, can you comment on that?
Council is free to do as it wishes on any matter regarding town regulations. As you know, staff provides its best advice, and council, through its infinite wisdom, either heeds or does not heed that advice.
Councilor Knott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Walsh. It's just that I've received many, many calls from constituents, and there's a strong desire to have Point Avenue Road one consistent speed limit. As I've taken the time, and I'm just going to show you real quick here. I've driven down every street and mapped out the speed limits. It's actually the only road, with the exception of the regional road on Sodom and Stevensville, and then partway into Gorham, that is an 80-kilometer road. So the rest of the road is actually 60 kilometers, as well as many of the streets that intersect this road are all 60 kilometers. So I respect the deliberations of the TTC and the Niagara Regional Police, but I'd like to see this come before council so that we can ultimately have a in-depth discussion about it. Okay, Madam Clerk, do I need to ask for a report for that, or give a motion, or what would you recommend?
I would recommend a notice of motion.
Thank you. Then I'd like to give a notice of motion. I'll deliver that at the next regular council meeting. Thank you. I just wanted to let you know I'll be bringing that forward at the next regular council meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Knott. Mr. Walsh, did you want to, with regard to the report that you prepared in reference to the stormwater management facilities, just for residents and the audience listening in, did you want to make comment or perhaps cover portions of the report? I'm sure you don't want to read the entire thing, but if you want to give us an overview, that would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Council may recall that a couple of months ago, there was deliberation during the environmental overlay decisions on stormwater ponds, and there's been issues pop up through the year. I think every councillor, I think, I've had a discussion with almost on the operation of these facilities. So council requested a memorandum of how these things operate and what we should be doing. The responses in your council package tonight, it does identify what we are doing, what we should be doing, and approximate costs going forward.
Thank you. Does any members of council have any comments with regard to this report? Councilor Becerra?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through you to Mr. Walsh. Mr. Walsh, the under the budgeting section, it says funding for inspections and sediment removal has not been budgeted for in the past and requires a future annual budget allocation of $16,000 to address the funding gap. How does that $16,000 fit into the table above that's showing total annual cost for facilities, current annual total future costs, and total future costs for 12?
Actually, Councillor Pizarro, Madam Clerk just brought to my attention that I need a mover to put this motion on the floor first. Would you be prepared to do so? Thank you. Okay, carry on.
Mr. Walsh, I'm just, if you could help me figure out what that $16,000 will go towards.
This account would act like a reserve account, whereas, as you properly note, we're looking at $16,000 a year, so we'd essentially put the money in the bank until we had enough to undertake some of our activities and then draw down from that.
Okay. So then if I could, Madam Chair, at this time then, while we're still under new business, if I could ask for the clerk's assistant, how do we then get that before us at budget time, because it's requesting a future budget allocation, or is that something that's coming forward on behalf of staff?
We will bring it forward as a supplementary operating item.
The $16,000?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mayor Redeco?
Yeah, just again for clarification on supplemental and base, why would this be classified as a supplemental item if it's something that needs to be done and it's going to need to be done on an ongoing budget item?
Mr. Walsh, did you want to?
Well, maybe Mr.
Mr. Jensen?
You're right. Most think we do consider anything that's part of existing services to be base, and we do attempt to bring some things forward based on size and of the amount to council. But that one is that we that is one we can consider with through the base.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mayor Redeco?
No, thank you.
Councilor Nutt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through yourself to the Director of Infrastructure, Mr. Walsh. In reading this report, and you're talking about the $16,000 to go to address future funding gaps, does that take into consideration some of the proposed subdivisions that we have coming online that we heard about last meeting?
This is just for what we have in our inventory right now. As the report notes notes that we do have, I think, five future stormwater facilities coming online in the next few years. So as they do come online and we take over operation, the budget would be amended at that time.
Are there any additional questions? Seeing none, I will call the question. All those in favor? That motion carries. Are there any questions regarding the business status report? Seeing none, I will hand the chair back to you, Your Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Zanko, and I will flip it over to the Chair of Corporate and Community Services, Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. Corporate and Community Services is in session. We have two delegations per the addenda circulated earlier. First, we will bring up Mr. Scott Roasts, Group Managing Editor, and Tracy Travis Scott, Circulation Manager for Niagara This Week. And they're speaking regarding the proposed amendment to business licensing bylaw Schedule 5 under Bill Distributors. Mr. Russ, thank you for coming tonight. You have 10 minutes to address council, and let it ask that you remain at the podium in case any of my colleagues have any questions or comments at the conclusion of your presentation.
Unfortunately, Teresa couldn't be here. She had a timing conflict, so I'll go through our notes and go from there. I apologize. I'll have to kind of read from script. I'm usually at the back covering council meetings.
No worries at all.
This is foreign territory up here, so. Just thank you, Your Worship, Mayor Redekop, council members, and town staff for the time to address the report CAO 14-2016 on the delivery of bills, and specifically in this case, the addendum proposed for newspapers. My name is Scott Ross, and I'm Group Managing Editor for Niagara This Week Newspapers, which includes the Fort Erie Post, which is distributed here in Fort Erie. We appreciate the opportunity to speak in advance of the consideration of the report and hope you'll consider deferring a decision until a detailed discussion with the newspapers affected can occur. Unfortunately, we were provided with the report on Thursday, and while we've had some time to review it internally, we haven't had any appropriate time to engage any further dialogue with administration or council or whatnot to go over the concerns that may have led to the proposed bylaw amendment. There are multiple references to 2012 in the staff report, and it shows that it's been more than 4 years since the last formal discussion with the papers on the issue. So we respectfully request the opportunity again, rather than have any type of swift decision made without an informative discussion, to at least either defer the motion or defeat it tonight for further discussion. At the very least, though, should you pursue the amendment further tonight, we are respectfully requesting an exemption for the rural delivery, as is mentioned in the staff report. Just going into a bit of the delivery side of things, in the Niagara This Week Carrier Handbook, and I'm an editorial, so I'm not an expert with circulation, but each carrier is given a handbook, and it goes through the delivery side of things. It specifically states that delivery people are told to deliver to the door in urban areas, and there's a pretty detailed poster that talks about the correct ways to deliver a newspaper, which is mailboxes and doors. Certainly the urban side, that's what we are told are required. Incorrect is getting it anywhere that it can get wet, blow away, whatnot. We continue to deliver to rural areas as well, and that's where the issue has come up, and we've requested that exemption formally. Basically, if we were to do it door-to-door, it would be rendered impossible if all deliveries had to be made door-to-door. There are health and safety and financial issues that would complicate the delivery process, especially given the long stretches between homes and in some rural areas, not to mention extensive country driveways and corridors that exist in those areas. It leaves the potential in excess of 4,000 homes no longer being able to receive their community paper and stay informed and engaged on what's happening in the town. That's about a quarter of our circulation in Fort Erie. There's more than 12,000 papers that go up. We take our role in the community very seriously, delivering important news and messages to the residents of Fort Erie. We are regularly running stories on various issues at Town Hall that not only stem from town council business, but also town business. Current examples, there was the property owner being fined for sealing the emergency door at a Fort Erie hotel, to the Point Avenue Woods preservation story. Just this week, we received releases on the budget, the carbon monoxide alarm fines, and no doubt that will be messages that are carried through in the pages of the paper this week as well. These messages are of interest to the entirety of Fort Erie, including those in rural areas. That's not to mention any other stories that we have in there. Today, there are many different ways you can get information, but still, especially in a town like Fort Erie, the community newspaper continues to be the best source for local news. Every week, we print numerous articles and photos from right here, news you won't find anywhere else. There are stories on local businesses and community groups stepping up and donating to COPE or Salvation Army. There are stories on the upcoming Santa Claus Parade. There are stories on Garrison Little Theater and its productions. There are stories on the racetrack and the importance it has in our community. We cover a broad base and touch all areas of the community. This feeling of community can be created by something as simple as reading about the success of local minor league sports teams or experiencing a local event through the newspaper's coverage. Most importantly, by delivering our paper weekly to homes across Fort Erie, we ensure everyone has equal access to this news, regardless of household income or whether or not they have internet access. Our newspaper has had a positive working relationship with the town staff in the past, and we wish to continue to follow that. And this is where Tracy, I wish she was here, she could explain, but I'm told that in instances where there have been issues relayed to us by the town, she says we've been quick to respond and resolve them to the point of retrieving newspapers from households when not delivered correctly. Our circulation manager, Tracy, has worked with the bylaw enforcement in the past and has rectified the concerns within 24 hours. She notes there are just a handful of instances that she was able to track over the last calendar year. The team at Niagara This Week feels that we can address the concerns without a bylaw amendment with enhanced communication. We already have a system in place where residents are provided the option to stop delivery of the newspaper if they wish to do so, and such opt-outs have been minimal in Fort Erie. This suggests residents are interested in continuing to receive the newspaper. I thank you for taking the time and hope you'll consider a submission when you're dealing with the report later tonight. We know what a valuable tool the community newspaper is, and while the media world is changing, reading your community newspaper will always be like coming home after days of traveling to get back to reality on the local scale in a truly accessible way. Please don't change that for thousands of your residents. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Well done. You should come to the front of the room more often. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Chair Passero. Just a few questions for you. Since you have the employee handbook, and admittedly you said you're not a delivery expert, so I'm just going to ask, is there instructions in there for subdivisions that do not have sidewalks?
I'm told, because this is something that I peppered after going through this myself, I was told that in the urban areas they should be delivering door-to-door, and that includes whether or not there are sidewalks. I asked Tracy what happens in the case that it's not happening, and the delivery people are questioned on it and then are ultimately relieved of their duties as they as their infractions take place.
If I may, Mr. Chair, what is the quality control process that you use? Do you spot check? Do you do drive-bys?
So you'll have to take this from my knowledge, and mm-hmm. I apologize, and I can get all these answers for you guys. I wish Tracy was here, so I apologize in advance. But we do distribution circulation checks. We have a verification team that calls out to various areas in the municipality. There, it is more of a, did you get your paper, did you get your flyers, whatnot, versus, you know, where was your paper? But those complaints certainly would come through that process. It's a case where they check with various households throughout the community. So obviously not a, you know, everyone in one particular route, but they do the best they can to get a broad base of the routes in the town.
Okay, and what do you classify a rural area? So obviously I'm Councillor Ward 6, which is Stevensville and Black Creek area, large number
suspect,
of farms.
Yeah, I suspect that, yeah, versus
so.
Some of the tighter subdivisions. When I asked her to identify how many papers would be delivered to rural areas, she asked me, and specifically, just to confirm, she said Stevensville, Crystal Beach, Ridgeway. So there's various portions of those communities that are fall within that rural side.
So is the whole community then under one designation, or is it actually dissected in
no,
certain areas?
Any community is dissected into individual areas based on the makeup of that particular community.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko, and then Councillor McDermott.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roth. And I agree with you. The paper is very, very valuable. And I also understand that in most cases you're relying on students who it may be their first job. So I really do take that all into consideration when reviewing this report. One of the things that you had mentioned is that there really hasn't been correspondence since 2012 with regard to an issue. But I just wanted to point out that my constituents have been struggling with this issue since literally I was 2 months into the term. And I know our CAO's assistant had been working with not only your paper, but all of the local media. And the issue is mainly, and I can speak to Ward 3, is in the winter time I get at least two or three constituents calling with broken snowblowers because they've had papers thrown on the driveway, and unfortunately it's got caught into snowblowers. In the summertime and spring, as we're having a thaw, I get constituents calling me and taking pictures of, you know, sometimes tens and twenties papers in their ditch. That is a huge concern for obviously infrastructure and drainage. So those are all of the things that I struggle with. And this report comes to the fore. I will be supporting it simply because I know it is a huge issue. And unfortunately, it may not be your particular paper. It could be another one of the local carriers, but the report that's before us, I think, is a way for us to add some sort of proactiveness and consequence if it's not being met. And from my understanding, for the past 2 to 3 years, we've been constantly having this communication. So I just wanted to let you know that I thank you very much for your delegation. And I completely understand the struggles that you're faced with as well. But that's most likely why I'll be supporting this report.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko. Councillor McDermott and then Councillor Luberts. Just a reminder, this portion is to ask questions of the delegates based on their presentations. Councillor McDermott?
Yes, I echo the same comments as Councillor Zanko. Now, I live in an urban area, and my paper comes to a driver who throws it out. And so in my area, which is a Battery Street area, we do get our papers this way. Now, that could be because of the fact that shortage of carriers or, you know, and personally, I don't have a snowblower, and it's a good thing I don't because I would be doing that all the time. I don't have a snowblower just so I can go out there and grab that paper because God knows I wouldn't know what to do without James Cooling's columns. So nevertheless, I have had probably 10 to 15 issues with snowblowers, and I have one fella that's actually had his snow blower repaired 3 times because of the paper, and I can't say it's your paper. It could be almost anybody's paper. But I do appreciate you coming here and talking to us about it. You know, I do support the motion as well, because, you know, I think we have to do everything we can to try and mitigate these circumstances for people with who are using snow blowers in the winter, and, you know, we all need that. I stick with the shovel because I want to read James's stuff. So aside from that, I do support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott. Just a reminder, we have another delegate appearing next on the same topic. Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ross, you commented earlier when Councillor Nutt was speaking about the rural and urban areas, and that you have designated areas for your delivery people and carriers and stuff. Do you compare those areas with our staff to make sure that what you consider to be rural is rural on our side and urban is urban on our side? Do you do that?
Through the chair, no, that's something that I can't answer that. And that's, I think, why my comment was about having a more fruitful discussion. I certainly understand, even though I'm not in circulation, I get comments from delivery issues all the time. People will reach out to anybody who they can express their frustrations to. What I'm saying is, you know, we'd like to have that type of discussion to determine how we can more efficiently deliver those results and determine what areas would be fitting to do what in. Basically, you know, we were provided this on Thursday, and that's where, you know, we wanted to have a bit of fruitful discussion to see how we can be more efficient with it.
Councillor Luberts.
Yes, thank you very much. That's all.
Mayor Redekamp.
Yes, I had a question with respect to your request for a postponement of this to a later date so there could be further discussion between your staff and the town staff. What do you think what would you anticipate might come out of that?
I think that just a better understanding of what areas we can work more efficiently on. I think the confusion over the newspapers, I'm not here to say anything negative about the other community newspaper in town. We're both in this and we both are affected. So certainly, you know, this is a case where we'd like to understand what issues we are in particular having. I've worked in communities where there's are 3 papers coming to your door in a week, and it gets very confusing. And certainly for us, we'd like to see what issues there are that we can relieve on our end, because from speaking to Tracy, other than addressing some issues specifically from bylaw enforcement, she cannot recall having a fruitful discussion other than 3 or 4 years ago.
And if I might, if the recommendation for council that we'll be dealing with this evening is adopted by council, what do you anticipate the impact would be in terms of how your newspaper reaches people living in the rural areas of the community?
So first of all, we hope you'd consider an amendment for that would exempt that area. Secondly, we would have to go back and strategize as to what we do. And, you know, that is certainly a reality in terms of what this might do. And we haven't hit that point. We got this, as I mentioned, a few days ago. So we wanted to at least get on the delegation list to create some further discussion with you guys and take it from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mayor Redekamp. Mr. Ross, do we have any idea as to quantities of newspapers that are thrown into the ditches after they read the editorial columns? Just a joke. You don't have to answer that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your delegation tonight. Next, I'd like to ask Mr. Justin McDonald, Group Manager of the Fort Erie Times, to come forward, speaking on the same issue. Mr. Mr. McDonald, welcome. You also have 10 minutes to address council.
Okay. He did an excellent job summing it all up, so I won't take the full 10 minutes. Yeah, I'm just here just to reiterate our support for the community, and thank you for taking the time on this matter. You know, one of the things that everyone said was, you know, the buildup on the end of the driveway. I've been with the Fort Erie Times now for almost a year, and some of the feedback that I've been getting from the local community was it was mainly involved on the Saturday paper, so I don't know if that's something that you guys are able to speak to today. But one of the things that we've made the decision for company-wide is to not publish the Saturday paper, the Fort Erie Shopping Times anymore. So I don't know if that's something that helps with this situation. And, you know, one of the things that Mayor Redekop said, you know, what can come away from this, obviously, if we do have to re-strategize on the distribution, and that does, you know, add a substantial amount of cost for us. And you all read the local news, and have stresses with restructuring our business, cost selective. So obviously that does hinder the way that we do get the local community news out there. So that's something that we would have to look at quite extensively.
Mr. McDonald, if you could maybe touch on a couple of the questions that were asked earlier that your counterpart wasn't able to mention just because of his position. But what is your strategy as far as identifying rural versus urban areas?
So I'm more on the media sales side. So in terms of distribution, I'm not the, you know, the expert there. But I do know that, you know, the urban, we do go door to door, and the rural is the more the driver approach, and we do throw it on the driveway. And from my understanding, what happens is, you know, a lot of our deliverers, you know, they are younger, it's their first job. So if they have an issue with maybe homework or they call in sick, a lot of times we get that call extremely last minute, and we do call on a driver to help to at least distribute the news so it still reaches individuals in a timely fashion. However, that does obviously pose as a bit of an eyesore on the driveway because it's not getting that door-to-door delivery.
And are you aware of an opt-out policy as well within your newspaper chain for someone who does not wish to receive the free papers?
Yeah, we can put them on a list, but I mean that list does still have the human error acceptability to it.
Comments or questions from my colleagues? Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. And just a question. Your paper is a little different as there is a fee to it. So let's say, for example, residents weren't to pay their $3 fee. Would they continually receive the newspaper, or would that be kind of an opt-out message there?
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to continue to deliver a product that someone's not willing to pay for in that sense. But, I mean, there would be rules and regulations in terms of how long the fee was. So, yeah, if you've ceased your subscribership, usually, you know, from my experiences, and I still get voicemails, you know, hey, I got a paper, I'm not paying for it. So then I forward it off to our circulation department and they'll investigate. So, I mean, it's, you know, everyone's still very passionate about the newspaper. I mean, even if we deliver a flyer to 35 to 36,000 people in Niagara Falls, if someone gets two flyers of the same company, I get a call saying I got two. So we know that people are still very much reading it. And, you know, they get two flyers in the same bundle, but they just feel guilty that they've gotten two of something that they were only supposed to get one of.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko. Further comments or questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Thanks very much for your time.
We'll go right into reports. First up is CAO 13 LC 14 2016, Land Matters of October 24th, and Special Land Committee meeting minutes of November 9th. Madam Clerk, could you remind me of Mayor Redekop's conflict of interest and where that falls?
As it turns out, the clerk has reminded me that we changed this so that we just receive these now. We don't approve. We don't make a decision on them. So
you don't have a conflict in the recommended tasks.
Yeah, I'll withdraw my conflict.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Somebody like to move the recommendations? Thank you, Councillor Zanko. So we will receive the minutes of October 24th, November 9th, and we'll approve the recommended tasks as outlined in Appendix 3. Comments or questions on those recommendations? Seeing none, all in favor? That's carried. Next up is CAO 14-2016, a mover for newspapers and driveways, Councillor Nutts. That recommendation is on the floor, so we have two options. We can approve, amend, or postpone based on comments from our delegations. Mayor Redekop, I'll start with yourself, and then Councillor Nutts, and then Councillor McDermott.
If Councillor Nutt wants to speak, that'd be fine, but I'd like to move that we postpone this to December the 5th so that at least there's an opportunity for the two newspapers to have some dialogue with our staff, because there is a balance that needs to be struck here, and I'm not sure that the newspapers have had an adequate opportunity to respond to this. But
let's hold that one in abeyance, yeah. And we'll proceed down the list and see where we get. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to speak to this, and actually I was going to suggest that we postpone because I think that having some open dialogue is important. But before we do, I was just going to make one request, is that there were some photographs provided, and it was on October 8th, 2016, at approximately between 4:55 and 5:20 p.m. And just for the benefit of the managers here from the papers, I was hoping that that Janine could do us a favor and just put it on the overhead so that you could see the distribution that happened on that day, because that was kind of the catalyst in my neighborhood of when I began to get calls. And the reason why is that it had rained that day, and we are downhill in my neighborhood from a catch basin, and the papers were blown about. I can tell you that I personally spent, 30 minutes and picked up in excess of 14 papers that were just blown over all over the place and all over the road. So if you'll allow me the indulgence, and we can just put those photos up so that for the benefit of the managers here. Mm-hmm. Now, how I knew the paper carriers were on vacation that week, and this was a fill-in. So the regular paper carriers in this neighborhood do a fantastic job. They always get them in the mailbox. They're never at the ends of the driveway. But when I called, as you can see, every red arrow points to a paper that was inside a bag because it had rained earlier that day. My concern is, because we're downhill, if these get over top of the catch basin drains, it's going to cause flooding on the street, which is going to cause a problem for everyone. So not only just the litter issue, and I went and picked up all these papers, by the way, personally, while I walked my dog. It was a little bit of good exercise for me and my dog.
They didn't get their paper that day.
Yeah. Well, they were all but you can see, I live in an urban area in my neighborhood, my greater neighborhood, where I walk around. It's a good 5-kilometer walk, but there's sidewalks there. Many of the residents actually on the boulevards have posts with mailboxes on them specifically for the papers. But as you can see, there's a large number of papers all the way up and down this street. So just for your reference. And when I called in to find out what happened, I was told that the regular carriers were on vacation, and this was a person who just drove by and tossed them out the window. So I'm sure that this happens in Councillor McDermott's neighborhood up and down his street, similar type situation. But just for your benefit, but I agree with the mayor that I'd like to see this postponed till December 5th so that it gives you all an opportunity to see what we're experiencing, hearing from the community, and what's being raised to us concern-wise from our constituents.
Thank you, Councillor Nutt. Councillor McDermott, and then Councillor Zanko.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have no problem with delaying that until December 5th. I guess there hasn't been a conversation in some time, and Thursday's kind of short notice, so I have no problem if we can find a way of mitigating this for everybody. I think that's a good idea.
Thank you, Councillor McDermott. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you. I was just going to say that I agree as well. It's not going to hurt matters to postpone it. But I'm really, really hopeful that together we can come to a resolution, simply because the pictures that Councillor Nutt is showing, it's a constant occurrence. Although I can say it has improved quite recently, but it is something that I hear of often. So hopefully together we can find a solution for this.
Thank you, Councillor Zanko. Seeing no further comments or questions, I'll go back to Mayor Redekamp for a motion to postpone until December 5th.
Thank you, yes. I move that.
Comments or questions on the postponement regarding the timing? Seeing none, all those in favor? So that's postponed until December 5th. Thank you to each of the delegates tonight, and we look forward to some conversations in the next couple of weeks. Takes us to COS 09-2016-2017 Council Meeting Calendar, moved by Councillor Zanko. Comments or questions? Councillor Zanko, and then Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that we refer this to Corporate Services for further deliberation, and also I would like for it to be added to our community and customer service strategic planning meeting. I think the dates and the items that are being suggested really need further review.
So you're making a motion to postpone. So the next strategic plan meeting, I think, is November 30th. So it'd be looking to go December 5th,
yes.
Regular council meeting. Madam Clerk, just a question regarding the timing. How does this impact any of our legislative requirements to publish an agenda or the next year's council dates?
Sorry, I was focusing on referring it, and then we changed it to postpone, so I'm just switching gears. Our notice is very small that we have to give, so I would like to think about the January dates, though, as far as budget meetings may be impacted. But council could make a decision with as little as 48 hours notice.
Okay. And what would a preference be regarding referral to a couple of our committees versus postponement and giving them the opportunity to comment in the meantime? Is there a better way to go procedurally?
It doesn't matter. It's at council's wish. It's just that's what I heard first, so I was anticipating referral to the committee, but you can certainly postpone it with direction to staff.
Okay. We'll go with the referral as originally proposed by Councillor Zanko. So that referral motion then is on the floor to Corporate Services and the Strategic Planning Workshop. How do we then bring that back before council? Would it be at the advisement of Corporate Services? Okay. So we'll leave it in Corporate Services' hands then if this motion goes forward. Did you want to comment on that?
I just wanted to make one other comment with regard to the March break meeting dates. Perhaps we could poll councillors before we decided on those dates as well.
Okay, so that could be a function of Corporate Services directive as well. Comments on the referral motion to Corporate Services? Seeing none, all in favor? That's carried. New business or inquiries under Corporate Services? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if you could tell me, what is the town stance or responsibility when town property becomes available for sale and there is a definite encroachment by an abutting neighbor to that property?
Mr. Letstick, what is a town's interest in that scenario?
Well, if we wanted to protect our interest, we would ensure that the encroachment was covered off by an agreement. And the agreements normally are kind of pro forma because they include other protections in order to help.
Is your question specific to encroachments on municipal property or is this adjacent properties?
So, right. The encroachment would be from a landowner onto a town property that is up for sale or potentially could be up for sale.
Mr. Lustig, anything further to add?
No. In a normal scenario of a purchaser and a vendor, that would be something that would be of great interest to the person who was obtaining the property because they would want to know the extent to which property.
Councillor Butler, anything further on that point?
Just one more question, thank you. And if the town property has any kind of barriers such as and maybe Mr. Walsh can help me with the correct terminology, but drainage or, you know, a culvert, not a culvert, but you know those cements?
Thingies? Catch basins, sewers,
head walls, catch basins.
Yes, catch basins. So if that is on a property that a town owns, is that something that the town takes care of as well?
It all depends on the circumstances of the transaction. one possible scenario if we were to be the catch basin was there and we were aware. But we had terms that said that the purchaser was going to take it on an as-is basis, then the purchaser that basis. But this, a similar situation to this actually arose recently, and we felt obliged to, in spite of the fact that the terms were on an as-is basis, we felt obliged to make the purchaser aware and act in good faith. And took a more, I guess, benevolent approach, which I think was reasonable.
Thank you, Mr. Lustig. Thank you, Councillor Butler. Further inquiries on corporate services? Seeing none, comments or questions related to the business status reports? Seeing none, I'll turn the chair back to His Worship.
Thank you very much, Councillor Passero, and that then takes us to Planning and Development Services. Councillor McDermott.
Thank you, Your Worship. Planning and Development Services is now in session. We have a presentation and delegation by Lee White and Anne-Marie Bizzeri. Good evening. State your name and address, and you have 10 minutes for your presentation.
Thank you very much. Good evening. My name is Alexander Fazari. I'd like to introduce Ms. Anna Maria Fazari, my mother, and Mr. Lee White, our planner. I'd like our address is on Matthews Road South in Fort Erie. I would like to thank Council and Your Worship. Thank you very much for allowing us to speak tonight and considering our proposal. I'd also like to thank Mr. Luberts for all of your assistance in bringing our concern to the floor. And I'd also like to thank Mr. Van Der Veen for all of his assistance, as well as Mr. Brady for his report that he made for our project. So right now I'll just move on to our first slide here. So why solar power? It's clean, it's green, renewable, and sustainable. Since Ontario implemented the FIT program and green energy programs in 2005, to now, greenhouse gas emissions as a result of producing electricity in Ontario have dropped by 80% in a recent report from the IESO that was published just 2 months ago. And now on to who is and what is the IESO. So the IESO was created on the dissolution of Ontario Hydro in 1998, and five corporations and entities were, as a result of it, being Ontario Power Generation, Hydro One, the Electrical Safety Authority, IESO, and the Electrical Financial Corporation. And all five of these entities have different roles in Ontario with regards to electricity production. And why we're choosing it to do on this land, it is properly zoned. It's zoned as rural. Our neighbors' abutting lands are also zoned as rural. The land is considered Class 4 and 5 in accordance to the Canada Land Inventory. So it's not prime land, which is ideal land to put solar panels on. And we've also spoken to Canadian Niagara Power, which stated that the lines are suitable in the area, the distribution lines, have the capacity and are suitable for connecting a project. Now I'll pass it on to Mr. White.
And just to address Lee White, 1891-9 wrote, just to address one of the big questions, why are we here? Basically, they're going to make an application to the IESO in order to get a contract through the feed-in tariff program, and they will be assigned points, a score, and competing against a bunch of other projects, and they will be get two bonus points if they have municipal support. And we are here projects. Specifically, there are two resolutions that are in the prescribed form of the IESO that are included as Appendix 4 of the staff report, of the administrative report.
first of which relates to basically setbacks. We have proposed a 30-meter setback, which is substantially more than is typically occurs in these cases. For a ground mount solar project, you're probably looking at 2 to 3 meters in height for the structures themselves, so 6 to 10 feet, not significantly visually obtrusive compared to most other projects. What we've got here is occupying in a very remote rural area of the town. If you're driving down Highway 3 and you turn on Matthews Road, it sort of dead ends. That's Matthews Road North. You have to go south off of Michener Road, down a dead end road. There's 20 acres of property, and they would occupy approximately 2 acres of that. So the first resolution is for setbacks. We're proposing 30 meters, about 100 feet, which is larger than any of the necessary setbacks within the agricultural area. The second resolution that we're requesting is just general support for the project in principle. So with that, it would help the applicant in order to achieve those two bonus points for their application. Generally, we do have, as you can see on the aerial, it's a very rural land use in this area, very isolated as well. It's on a dead-end road. Not a lot of residences in this area. This is really an ideal area. The IESO is looking to put it in rural areas like this on low-quality agricultural land, which this is as well. The larger parcel right here in the middle of this, relatively quickly. This is the land classification. The green portion there is the class 5. The little bit of yellow in the corner is the class 4, marginally better, none of which is prime ag land. So this just sort of depicts where the 30-meter setbacks would result. There's a couple of different options where it could be situated on the property, and we are prepared to work with the town as part of the consultation process that is beyond what would be required through the FIT program. That a little bit further. Environmental constraints, virtually nothing on this property. There's a very slight amount of, it's not provincially significant, wetlands in the northeast corner of the property. So basically, I did want to indicate there was a bit of a misunderstanding, and after consulting with the applicants, there is no obligation for zoning or for public consultation as part of the provincial process. Staff wisely went to some of the other adjacent municipalities in Welland and Port Colborne to see what they're, both of which had experience with solar panels. And the city of Welland has actually got a blanket resolution supporting solar facilities anywhere in the town so that they can use that fact that they've got this blanket resolution in order to get their two bonus points. I think the rationale behind that is that, you know, it could be potentially, it's adding value to the property. You've got vacant agricultural land in this situation. We're looking at potentially adding $1 million of infrastructure to this property, roughly, which is our understanding would be taxed at an industrial rate with zero cost to the town. So I would say that could provide a substantial benefit beyond simply being consistent with the official plan, which suggests municipality does support energy conservation and renewable energy systems. It's understood that there is a desire to have some oversight and some involvement in the process, and after consulting with the applicants, we have prepared a letter that we'll put on file today, agreeing that they would voluntarily, upon getting a FIT contract, undergo a site plan process with agreement as well as public consultation. And I'll just briefly read through this. It's just one paragraph. To Dear Mayor Redekop and Council of the Town of Fort Erie, we, Alexander and Anna Maria Fazari, the principals of Niagara Solar Power Company Limited, consent to voluntarily participating in the site plan process toward the development of an agreement. It is further agreed that this process would involve a public consultation process. While neither of these are required under the feed-in tariff rules, we are consenting to participate in this process following having been granted a FIT contract. given the distinct possibility that Niagara Solar Power Company Limited may never be granted a FIT contract, we feel that it would be premature and a waste of the town's resources to undergo this process in advance of a project that may never move forward. So basically what we're asking is that once we get a firm handle on this is a real project, they've been granted a contract by the FIT, that we would agree to undergo this process. We certainly realize that there's flaws with the provincial process as it exists now. It doesn't provide much opportunity for the participation of the municipality, but what we're proposing here is far more than is currently taking place in the City of Welland or the City of Colborne, both of who are supporting these projects. If you look at the comparison within the staff report, indicates they are supporting these types of projects, and that public consultation is only taking place where the municipality is a proponent of the projects. So we're proposing something that's far beyond what's currently happening in the region right now. There is a deadline. There's an intake right now on November 25th, and it is the applicant's intent to submit an application, either with or without the municipality support. They do want to move forward with this and at least see if they're able to get a contract. Certainly would prefer that it be with the municipality's support. If they're granted a contract, I think it would be prudent of the municipality to accept this offer to undergo this process when they've got a FIT contract and they've actually got the potential for a real project, and be prepared to invest the money that's necessary in drainage studies, do the static studies, where's landscaping going to go, and the municipality will have a seat at the table in helping to... anything else that you wanted to add?
We were looking at the report with regards to resolution number 1, which is in page 20 of the package we've provided to the city on Friday. We were committed, as Mr. White said, to the 30-meter setbacks. As well, one big thing that we wanted to mention with regards to the resolutions, where we can't change the wording to them, so which is why we'd rather do an agreement. If we do change any of the wording to the resolutions or the templates, the ISO will outright reject what we've presented to them, which is the main reason why we'd rather do an agreement in this fashion. Particularly with regards to resolution number 2, they were very specific on that one. With regards to, we did have a resolution number 3, which was in page 46 of our package. I'm not entirely sure we need to make it a resolution, but it's a confirmation. It's simply stating that the support resolution was passed and it's just being confirmed. It just has to be signed by an official from the city. On to questions or concerns.
Thank you. Questions? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you to, I'm sorry, I missed your name here. At any rate, Mr. Fazari and Mr. White. I have a few questions, actually. The first of which is the deadline. Last week, we were under the impression, at least I was under the impression, that there was a rush on this because the deadline was November 25th. And now I find out that there's another deadline that could have possibly been targeted for a new start date in January. So, and you're nodding your head, so you are aware of that?
With regards to the deadline in January, I was never made aware from the ISO that this occurs. I went to a conference in May, the Ontario Solar Conference, where the ISO spoke. Pretty much for all the past FIT projects, they don't actually announce them in January. They're announced either in late summer or early fall. With regards to actually the LRP project that was instated, they at the conference, they said, we're announcing it now. It's going to go through. Everything will be great. With regards to FIT, they said, we're a bit iffy. We're not sure if we're going to continue with that. And then come the fall, they actually canceled the LRP. They suspended that. And said, actually, we're going to go ahead with the FIT. We're going to completely move forward with that. So they kind of make decisions very variably. And I think a lot of that has to do with the provincial legislature dictating what they're going to be doing at that moment in time.
based on past historic data, yeah, all the FIP contracts or FIP programs that they have stated when it's going to be starting was in the summer or early fall.
I could just... So we were not aware of any January date. Nothing is published anywhere about January having a new opportunity for a FIT program. We only learned about it in the documentation from Mr. Brady. So it's not a public thing. If somebody knows about that, it's news to us. It's not anywhere on the internet that we could find. And in the past year anyways, there was only one opportunity. And this year it's only between November 7th and November 25th. And last year it was at approximately the same time last year.
It's been my experience that there are different offerings coming out for different size of projects. The LRP that he was making reference to is the large renewable projects, which could be larger than what we're proposing here. The current intake is for projects of 500 kilowatts and less, not including 10 kilowatts and less, which is sort of your housetop units. So it's been my experience that these come out at most once a year for this particular scale of project of greater than 10 kilowatts, less than 500 kilowatts, and we're at 250. So we wouldn't be able to qualify for the larger ones, and the transmission capabilities do not exist at this location for anything we're proposing right now.
How many points do you need? If you don't get the 2 points with the municipal backing, would that be detrimental to you?
With regards to the... requirements to points, the ISO stipulates that you have to have at least one priority point. Not getting municipal support resolution would indeed be a bit detrimental. We would have to pursue a different route in order to obtain priority points.
And only 92% of all FIT projects, 92% of FIT projects did have municipality approval. So I would suggest that they probably won't pick us if we don't have that.
And then I have one final question, if I may, Mr. Chair. And I know that this is part of the report, so I can ask this at the report if I'm not allowed to write at this point, but the houses on Matthews Road from the south from the site, are they going to be able to see those solar panels?
With regards to the houses in the report, there's a statement that was released by the Ministry of Energy with regards to the visual screening. So the houses south won't be able to see us. If they were, we would have to put some type of screen, which is typically trees, preferably trees that are local to the area. For example, the property that's north, you can actually see the house. So we're going to have to we have to put a fence, and then in front of that, we're going to have to put a line of trees. There's already a line of trees that is currently present, but since you can still see the house, we're going to actually, if we're selected to do the project, we're going to put more trees there in order to prevent that line of sight issue.
One last one, if I may, and I'm sorry. This goes to then the site plan, since you're not willing to do one prior to, because you don't know if you're going to get the project, and you say that you're going to volunteer to work with the town and do a site plan and public consultation. What's to stop you from revoking that?
We have a signed document. Be willing to sign other documents with regards to that as well. Pretty much anything to satisfy that, as long as it just doesn't, with the resolutions we presented today, that wording isn't changed. But we would definitely be willing to sign a contract or an agreement with regards to doing public consultations with the city.
Thank you.
I would also suggest that if you wanted, and I'm not saying that this would ever happen, but if they decided not to have the municipality participate in site plan, you'd be perfectly within your rights to call the IESO and indicate that you're withdrawing your support and that their grant of the contract was based on fraudulent information.
Councilor Lubberts.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. White, for being here, and thank you very much for the Fazaris. I just wanted to ask the question about the the setbacks. Now, when I read the information that I received last week, I did read something in there about there was a 20-meter setback, and it could be as much as 100 meters. And that's set by the province with the contract? That's within the contract?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes. Okay, thank you. You have to follow those rules as far as if you want to have the contract, you have to follow those rules.
Absolutely.
And when we spoke, when I was at your house last week or a week Saturday, you mentioned something about how the province, if you're selected and the project were to go forward, that the province would come in on a regular basis to do inspections on the property. Could you just explain that to council so that everybody understands the inspection criteria?
Absolutely. So the IESO is perfectly within its right to send people to inspect the property to make sure that we are complying with the Electricity Act, the Green Energy Act, and the contract that was handed out that they gave us from the ISO. Part of these inspections, which they state would be every 6 months, I'm not too sure if that does happen, but they stated that they do that. If we are not in compliance with one thing or more, it's perfectly within their right to terminate the contract, which we would absolutely not want to occur. So we would absolutely comply with everything that they state. And I'm sure if they did do their inspections, they would find that we were complying with all the rules.
Thank you very much.
Another point. Should we not be in compliance, the IESO would take over the project.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
We have a lot to lose if, you know, we don't comply. So absolutely, we would be compliant.
Okay. Thank you very much. And then I guess my question would be to Mr. White. Just the timeline and the deadlines for introducing this year project. It came out November 1st, and then the deadline to submit is November 25th. And I'm just wondering, I don't know much about the program myself, but it would seem to me that if there was something for January, that would be something that would have to be submitted and then by a date, and then there would be a deadline for that. So if you submitted for the November 1st intake, then your deadline would be November 25th. Is that correct?
That is sort of the window of opportunity. They start accepting applications on November 1st. They finish taking applications on November 25th. Window closes. No more applications for that intake.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Just if I may add a point, it actually was supposed to open November 1st, but opened November 7th. And so the application then was the end date was actually extended to November 25th.
Yes, thank you. And if I may, I understand that there was some kind of a glitch with their computer or something like that. And the way I read it, it sounded like it maybe the glitch was because there were so many applications. But is that, or was it just a computer error?
We're not fully certain of whether it was. I know for sure that it wasn't with regards to applications on October 31st, because when we went to that website earlier in the morning before the applications would be accepted in by the program, the entire page actually said you can't post anything due to technical errors, and that remained for a whole week with regards to that. They wouldn't state when a new date would be. They just said the whole week you can't access the site due to technical issues. Even before the application process was to begin. There was indeed the server rooms for the province were hacked, I think, a week prior to that, as was the result for the EQAO testing. I'm not sure if that had anything to play with it, but it was not as a result of a large number of applications. It was technical issues of some sort.
Yes, thank you very much, and thank you, Mr. Chair, if I may, just one more. Mr. White, not knowing a whole lot about this, I'm looking at projects that would come forward and being accepted by the province, right, the FIT program. if there are a lot of applicants? Does it go by just the applicant and then your area, or would it be if there was a lot of people, say, in Grimsby that applied, but Grimsby couldn't handle it all, then those people would be denied no matter what and when they applied for it. But if there's only three or four in Fort Erie and the capacity is there for Canadian Niagara Power, that they would be accepted over and above the people that were that submitted first and had their application brought forward ahead of someone else.
There is limits set on how many, sort of the total capacity that's available based usually on where the substations are. Like this, all of the areas that are tributary to this substation, we can take another 1.5 megawatts. So, for example, I forget what the capacity is for Fort Erie, but I know that it's higher in Fort Erie than it is in Port Colborne because they've got more limitations on their capacity. So, it does vary geographically.
If I may, Mr. So, if I'm seeing this correctly, then even if some of the applicants were before the Fazaris and applied before, because when I read in the report, it sounded to me like it was first come, first serve. And I would assume that that's not necessarily the case, that it would be the capacity of each municipality, and then the province has their criteria different
than... That is correct. They will. It's not first come, first serve basis. All of the applications come within the application window. They're assigned to their geographic area that they're tributary to. They rank them all. The highest scoring ones get contracts. The lowest scoring ones or ones that are just don't meet the criteria are eliminated.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Councillor Zanka.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Through you to the Fazaris, just out of curiosity, have you canvassed the neighborhood and talk to the neighbors with regard to their feelings on this project?
We have not spoken to any of the neighbors in the area. We weren't too sure that we were supposed to do that or not.
Thank you.
Councillor Passero, and then Mayor Redica.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for joining us tonight and helping lend some clarification to the massive emails we got over kind of a 72-hour process. The diagram that you showed earlier, Mr. Weitz, that showed the 30-meter setback on the property and then a blue square, that blue square is indicative of where the actual project would take place, maybe not the location, but that would be determinant of the size of the scale of...
Yeah, that's approximately 2 acres. It's a square. It could be a rectangle, and that's just within the overall area where it could be situated. That's one option. And there's a lot of flexibility. I've met the Fazaris out at the site, and, you know, the cheapest option is put it right up beside the road. It's probably get approved. It's a dead-end road. There's not much traffic there, but they'd be willing to move it further back to get it further away from houses, and they've been pretty accommodating from what I'm hearing.
Is this, through you, Mr. Chair, is this the extent that the project will ever be, or are there expansion opportunities to be had or in mind? My question relates to why couldn't we increase the buffer if that's going to be the extent of the size of the actual workable part of this project?
The project is designed to be 250 kilowatts. The reason for that, even though this intake can go up to 500 kilowatts, the transmission lines in the area cannot accommodate 500 kilowatts. So I would say that for the foreseeable future, and I don't see why anyone would, the cost of extending and improving the transmission to the nearest like where it would be higher volume, would be prohibitive to do anything larger than what we're proposing right now.
Okay. And through you, Mr. Chair, when did you become aware of the requirements, or maybe not the requirements, but the fact that a couple of municipal resolutions would lend some points to your FITS application? And I ask that in the context that all of the correspondence I've read, whether it's been provided by our staff or through yourselves, it looks like the earliest dates, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you had made contact with staff here at Town Hall was October 26th to begin this process. When were you actually aware that this was a possibility? I note that in the package, I see a template that's dated June of 2016. I just ask that to bring it all full circle, that we're really under the gun here to rush this through. And if you were aware in June that this was a possibility, why did it take until October 26 to start the conversation?
I was aware of the program a year prior, and we were trying to obtain access to the documents as to how to go about it. As a matter of fact, it was a year to the date of closing, which would be the 25th, when I found out about the program in 2015. There was no way for me to access these documents. It's once the program is, once the deadline date has been met, they kind of remove all the documents, you can't really access them. So I was waiting for a couple months. I was corresponding with the IESO, and they told me to come back to the website in around October time. And that's when we decided to go back to the website, was in October, and we downloaded as much of the material as possible and went. We did as much as we could with the materials that we had. We were relying on rules from 4.0.3 to help us determine if the land was suitable. But with regards to the forms, I wasn't aware that they were out until October.
Okay. And I just asked that because the one form I'm looking at, which is Templates Municipal Council Support Resolution, contained in Appendix 3, which has your company name and project filled in, lands in the town of Fort Erie, and the resolution is dated June 2016. Is that when you got your hands on that, or is that just the date that they had put onto the paperwork?
That's, I believe, the date they created the form. There's also one dated, I think, the support resolution is November 2016. So they modify as things go through. And then on the actual application site is the confirmed documents that we're to use. So we were using the documents that were provided that we were aware of was open at the beginning of October.
Okay, so you did your best, and the first opportunity was when you had your kind of act together was October 26th to pursue it within Town Hall. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mayor Redicott?
Thank you very much. I must say that I know now more about solar panels than I ever anticipated or really want to know. But as I understand it, Mr. White, you can probably answer this. This application can be made by the Fazaris regardless of what the town does.
Absolutely.
And so the town doesn't have to do anything.
Correct.
And just to follow up the discussion about the demand here, the email that we received from the manager of development approvals in Welland says that this website at IESO crashed November the 7th because of the high demand. And you don't, your clients don't think that that's accurate.
Likely the case. There's a lot of interest around the province, and you know, I know on the first go around of FIT, they were expecting 2,000 megawatts and got 32,000. Like the number of applications was 16 times the capacity they were accepting.
Right. So this also indicates that in terms of vetting these applications, if the date closes, it would be a vetting by completeness, then the number of priority points, and then date stamping. Is that your understanding of the process?
Yeah.
So the whole purpose of this request by your clients is to get those two priority points. Staff's putting your folks through the hoops to get those points.
I think there's a real... Municipalities have been snubbed by the provincial regulations formed as the way they have. The province sort of came up with the Green Energy Act, said we want to support green energy, and I was doing applications to rezone property 8 years ago to have them accommodated. Every single municipality was different. There was a whole bunch of different interpretations of how the regulations were to be implemented. In order to rein this in and support it, the province said that we're going to take that power away from the municipalities, many of which, you know, will to this day over our dead body stance. But we're prepared to do as much as we can, go above and beyond what is minimally required and what's happening in Niagara in this case, because we do believe that there will be a benefit to the municipality, tax benefit, and as well as, you know, living up to the OP support of renewable energy.
Thank you. And I wonder if you could just put up on the screen the slide that related to the reference to the town's official plan. So you're quite correct. Our official plan does support renewable energy systems, but then there's some subject twos and what have you. And I believe the staff's concern, and maybe you can confirm this, Mr. White, is that we have absolutely really no control over this, and so your clients seem to be offering some control in exchange for the priority points.
That is correct. At the time the staff recommendation was made, this offer was not on the table. In the correspondence that's in here, the Fazaris had indicated that they would not be willing to do it, but would give it consideration after consulting with their lawyers and planners. And they spoke with me, and I said, hell yeah, let's do it. And there's really no drawback. It's I think, the best of both worlds. We can provide you with some control, much as we can do within the parameters that we've got. And, you know, you've got to take us at face value and, you know, what is this letter worth? And, again, as I mentioned before, if we welch on the deal, call the EIESO and say, no, made under fraudulent circumstances, and withdraw your support.
I might, Mr. Chair, ordinarily when we enter into site plan agreements or site plan approvals, there is a requirement for security. What's the position of your clients on that?
It's a lot easier to accommodate once we've got a contract than there's actually value to the project.
I understand that.
And, absolutely prepared to do security. What we're envisioning in the way of requirements would be landscaping and some relatively minor drainage matters. And don't expect that that's going to be a six-figure mitigation or municipal initiative by any means.
I don't know, Mr. Chair, if I might, I don't know what it would involve either, but I do know that this has been a work in progress because we've seen three iterations or more of exactly what your client's position is, hence some of the problem last week, even now some of the maybe consternation that you may be sensing now, because this has gone from request for four resolutions, including a 15% equity partnership, to something less, to something even less, all for us to find out that if we don't do anything, the application can still proceed and there could very well be solar panels there. And at the very least, the proponents would have to comply with the IESO's regulations in terms of setbacks and screening. Okay, thank you.
Are there any more comments or questions? Councilor Zanko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, and regardless of where this goes tonight, and I'm going to have further comment when the report's on the floor, I did just want to congratulate you on the initiative. I think it's a great initiative, and more so, it's nice to see a mother-son effort and collaboration between the both of you like this. It's very refreshing for me to see all the hard work that you both put into it. So thank you.
Thank you. I feel very blessed to be able to work with my son.
Roberts. Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just something, another point that I remembered in our discussion with Alexander. You talked about not only are there solar panels on the land, but you're also required to do other things, to use the land for other uses. And we had just a small little brief discussion about that at your house. And I'm just wondering, can you elaborate a little bit on that, just to explain to council that as much as you have to do the solar panel according to your contract, you have to do some other, is that mandated by the province that you have to use it for other uses?
At the time, we were unsure if the property was zoned correctly, which if it wasn't, we would have to do the primary purpose of the land would have to be farming. We no longer have to meet that requirement. However, we have 18 acres and it would be foolish to not pursue to farm that land. So we're absolutely going to be farming that land as well. Or we'll be attempting at least.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any further questions? Councilor Knott.
Thank you. Just to piggyback off Councillor Lubert's last question is, can you just describe to us what the prior use of the land has been over the last amount of time? And I don't know how long you've owned it, but since it's been in your possession?
We obtained possession of the land in, I believe it was May of this year. At the time of possession, the past owners of the land kind of let it sit idle for about a decade or so. So it was completely overgrown with bush. So we had to clear some of the bush that was there. It was a lot of it was dead. There was a little bit of trash here and there that we had removed. Prior to that, we were informed that at one point, I think there were horses there. Dating, we had the register of this thing. I guess the land was owned by the same family since the beginning of Canada. And they just kind of been farming it here and there, having cows, horses on it, et cetera, until the past decade where they kind of left it sit.
Further questions? Thank you. So we'll move on to reports, PDS 95-2016. Do I have a motion? Councilor Zanko. Comments or questions?
Yeah, this is the amendment to the comprehensive zoning bylaw that we're on.
Yes, I'm sorry, Your Worship.
I wanted to compliment the author of the report. I thought it was an excellent report that provides lots of information and good rationale and outlined well. The only question that the report did not answer was the statement by Mr. Perry in one of the attachments that 1.2-meter side yard setback is standard throughout Niagara. Is that the case?
Mayor, a 1.2-meter side yard setback is certainly typical. My experience is that it's not only, the municipalities don't only use the 1.2-meter side yard setback, but it certainly is a typical side yard setback.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, I think that we even provide for, in other areas, a greater setback if the building is higher than one story. Do we not?
Through to the mayor, yes, we do. And certainly in the R2 zone, where there's an infill situation, that is a new construction between two established houses, we require more than that as well.
Thank you.
Any further comments or questions? Seeing none, all in favor? Opposed, if any?
Carry.
So we'll move on to PDS 96-2016, addition of 848 Garrison Road to Heritage Registry. Councillor Passero. Mayor Redicott.
I might, Mr. Chair. The report indicates that we generally try to work with the cooperation of the owners. Have there been any situations that staff is aware of where we have proceeded without the cooperation or collaboration of the property owners in connection with a heritage property?
Mr. Brady?
Through to the mayor, not that I'm aware of. There was a start to be a suggestion that we may want to do that with the former Ridgeway Public School, but that didn't move forward in that direction. But that's the only one that I was aware that the committee was starting to move in that way.
And a further question, in view of the what appears to be a fairly in-depth research relative to the significance of this property, is there any reason why we couldn't now, as a council, proceed to seek designation under the Heritage Act?
Mr. Brady?
Through to the mayor. There's nothing that is an impediment from the point of view of the Heritage Act for doing that, but I would caution council that it would be desirable to have a conversation with the owners of the property before they would do so.
I can appreciate that, and I'm wondering, what if we had a valuable heritage property, and in my mind, this is one of them, and there are very few left in Fort Erie because of fires and demolitions and what have you. What if the property owner wasn't interested? What would the downside be to the municipality if we decided we wanted to move forward?
Mr. Brady?
Through the mayor, in terms of turning the Heritage Act on that particular property, there'd be no downside. But in terms of starting to make the community not want to preserve heritage, and perhaps properties that the council may be considering in the future, they would have demolition orders put to them beforehand.
By my, in connection with the Appendix 1, which is the site location map, and it shows the proposed severance line, it appears that the severance line at the south limit, that is near Garrison Road, actually goes into part of the cleared area of this property. I wonder if the planner has any insights into that.
Mr. Hayworth?
Yes, through the chair to Mayor Redekop. We've had some discussions about the property at the Heritage Committee. The person who has, I guess, power of attorney for the property owner who has some medical issues sat in on a couple discussions with the committee, and they want some flexibility for part of the property. It's they want to try and fulfill the current property owner's wishes of the heritage significance of the property. So when the committee looked at the line, we actually marked some spots with spray paint out on the site to get an idea for the distances from the side of the house. And there was some discussion about having some cleared area which could potentially allow a bit of an entranceway or a bit of a little more flexibility in developing the western portion of the property if it ever was severed off, because there's definitely some encumbrances on entranceways off that road. As you know, a large portion of the property is wooded, so there would have to be environmental impact studies done on the wooded portion of the property. So how much of that would ultimately develop is questionable. So we wanted to leave a little bit of cleared area to help facilitate potentially some development of that site, even if it was just for a house on the property, to make it a little easier. And that line that was chosen is a minimum line the committee wanted. They weren't looking at all the other aspects of severance, just the setback they thought was what they were amenable to as a minimum setback from the house to provide enough of to put the property and the heritage of the home on the site in perspective on the remnant parcel. And it does incorporate one of the older trees on the property as well from that distance.
I think I heard, and maybe I didn't, but the this is the minimum. I'm wondering whether there was consideration given to being at least equal setbacks on either side, which would mean that that line should be pushed further west. It doesn't appear that the line includes all of the cleared area around the house right now. If one looks at this, I think the gray area is the cleared area.
Yes, generally. The committee discussed all those elements, and actually there was discussion on exactly what you're talking about, but ultimately they felt that that setback was satisfactory as a minimum.
I get that. To some extent, but I would think that we would want to, I'd be in favor of at least retaining with the property what historically has been cleared as part of the yard of the property. So as you go forward with the Heritage Committee, for what it's worth, you might you might indicate that. And do we know what the owner's wishes are? You've indicated that the attorneys appointed by power of attorney have expressed this. Do we know what her wishes are, actually?
Well, the original owner's wishes, I think, are you know, she was the one that, I guess, instigated the placing of the plaque on the property. So
right.
Her interests are the heritage conservation of the home and the person in charge of the property currently and having to pay the bills, et cetera, is trying his best with the other family members to try and fulfill those wishes or maintain those wishes as long as he can. So the aspect is, can there be something done with a portion of the property in the future? And that's what the committee wanted to look at for him.
Right. So again, I don't know why we wouldn't have included all of the cleared area, but you were at the committee meetings. I think this is a compromise that the committee was prepared to agree to, but I don't know what the proposal was. The attorney who represents the owner of the property who would like to preserve some or maybe for all we know all of it is trying to sever off as much as possible so that, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but so that I understand, so that the house and surrounding lands can be preserved, but there will be a remnant of part of property that can be further developed one way or the other.
That's correct.
That's it.
And that development of that other portion of the property would require rezoning, depending on what it was, perhaps official plan amendment, probably a traffic study, an environmental impact study, and a heritage study upon putting this on the registry. So there's definitely Planning Act approvals required down the road, and the committee was basically dealing with two items. One, what would be the minimum setback that they could, in a sense, live with, also that they thought, let's get it on the registry, protect from demolition until it can be assessed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I guess, and I know that it may not have captured exactly what you're saying. I don't think the Heritage Committee should be considering what they can live with. I think we should be considering how much we can preserve and how much the owner would be willing to part with. And so there may be other factors that I'm not aware of, but if this came forward to us in some fashion for approvals of some sort, I would want to see that that parcel of land that has been historically cleared and has been part of the home should be preserved. And I would think that part of that line would need to move, part of the severance line would need to be moved west to encompass that. And it's all fenced off. My recollection is it's all fenced. So anyways, those are my observations. I know Councillor Passero is on the committee and probably has some insights as well.
Councillor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Mr. Hayworth for his work on this project. It wasn't easy to arrive at where we are now, but I think it will be well worth it in the end should certain things play out. We have developed a very good working relationship with the trustee of the property, so we haven't got to this point without his respect and his coordination and patience. And what we looked at was the likelihood that a severed parcel could go through some type of development process to make it marketable. Ideally, the funds that would be generated from the sale of the severed parcel, the property trustee would like to put back into the house to continue its preservation. So that's the reason why you see a little bit of that shaded area, just to give it a snowball's chance that somebody would want to purchase that property. Because if we were to push that line further to the west, you're looking at a piece of property that for all intents and purposes has zero developable value to it. There's no area off the street that we can say is already factored in. You're looking at significant restraints and constraints, as Mr. Hayworth had put it. So the committee was looking at that. The reason why we ended at 75 meters was it was the closest we could get to allow that, but also maintain a balance of the property. And you'll note in the report, there is one item off of that extra cleared portion that we would like to have relocated onto the remaining, and that's the water pump that's there. So we would take the heritage value that was in that little extra piece and move it to with the house. But the committee was pretty adamant that if, at the end of the day, if the goal is to preserve this property and this home, the best way to do that is to give the owner of the property a fighting shot to sell the balance of the lands. So the committee was looking at all those different angles. In the absence of that, even going forward, if the property owner feels that they can't do that, even with what we've given them, because I'm sure the property owner would have liked to have had less than the 75, but we had to take a lot of things into account, then they may look at putting the entire parcel up. And now we're facing a whole different ball game. Do we want to take the step that has never been taken before and force a home to be on the registry? That's a conversation for a different day, but we didn't really want to have that conversation if we didn't have to have it. And right now we don't really have to have it. If there's a chance he can sell off that parcel, bank the money, and continue going the way that we're going. So we met on site a couple of times. Mr. Hayworth has facilitated those conversations between the committee and the property owner, and I'm comfortable with where it is right now. Hopefully the property owner can do something. I know that money and time is running out. They recently had an auction of the items within the house to generate some funds for its current upkeep, so we don't have a lot of time left. So we're doing whatever we can to assist the property owner, because at the end of the day, we believe that his intent is true to the original owner, and that's the preservation of the historical designation of the property itself. And if I could just add, for my colleagues' benefits, what we're looking to do is just place this on the unofficial registry, which means that for whatever reason, whether it's by the current property owner or somebody new, if they wanted to bulldoze this home, it would be a 2-month stay of execution. So we could interject at that point with formal designation. But by us at least doing this tonight, it gives the committee the signal from council that, yes, this is important to us, and please continue to do your due diligence in preparing for whatever the next step might be. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Councilor Passero. Mayor Redicott?
Yep. Thank you very much, Councilor Passero, for the background. Is there an appraised value for the total parcel?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Worship.
Is there a appraised value for what is being proposed to be preserved?
No, there's not that I'm aware of, partly because I think, one, they wanted to at least have an idea what severance line, from a heritage perspective, the committee could deal with. The line could be different once all the planning work is done as well. Keep in mind, but that's the minimum setback from a heritage perspective. Keep, like, for a Planning Act application, there's going to be other studies required, depending on the development.
So, and by, just for clarification, maybe by the clerk, by accepting the recommendations in this report, we're not bound by that severance line as a council, are we? Good question. Thank you.
I would defer to Dave, Mr. Hayworth, for that.
Way the, through the chair to the mayor, the way the application were to be applied for. It could be applied for at the time of maybe a future development application. There'd be a rezoning with that, et cetera. So obviously the council would indirectly be dealing with kind of where the development line would be through the zoning amendment. It could be in advance of that, though, as well. So that's difficult to determine. But the Heritage Committee just wanted to say, here's what the line is from our perspective.
Yeah. If I might, Mr. Chair, I don't want to make this any more complicated. We're going to be getting another report back from staff with respect to recommendations regarding possible designation of the home. And
yes, one of the recommendations of this report is that council direct the committee to actually look at that firmly and bring back a recommendation with respect to designation.
And I wonder if there's any time frame when we might expect to receive that type of report.
Well, the committee is a volunteer group, and it does take some research. They probably do a little more research than what's before you now. And they just finished one up, so that helps. So I would imagine 3 months.
And at that point,
3 months.
And at that point, Mr. Chair, would we then have some more definitive understanding of what the severance line looks like, where it would be?
Mr. Brady?
I think it may be helpful to the council to know that the zoning on the property is ND, and therefore before any severance could occur to the property, that property would have to be rezoned. So therefore, that would be fully within your mandate.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Mr. Hayworth.
Any further comments or questions? Call the question. All in favor? Opposed, if any? Carried. I get a mover for PDS 97-2016, Niagara Parks Commission Service Review Policy. Councillor Butler? Any comments or questions? Your Worship.
If I might, Mr. Chair, if the Parks Commission persists in proceeding with its plan here and doesn't better define the areas that that our staff has indicated require some modifications on, do we have the ability to appeal this anywhere?
Mr. Brady?
No.
That was a good answer.
That's the type of thing that lawyers get very uncomfortable about, because it presumes that a government agency is all-knowing, and there are hardly any of them that I'm aware of. So, no comment. Okay, that's very helpful, because I do agree with the comments made in the report that there needs to be some better clarification, and that a lot of what is being proposed by the Parks Commission is premature, and there should be some further studies on this. I'm going to support, obviously, the report.
Any further comments, questions? All in favor? Opposed? Carried. We'll move to PDS 97-2016, PDS 98-2016, Niagara Solar Power Company, request for council endorsement. A mover? Councilor Zanko? Comments or questions? Councilor Zanko?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just again wanted to say that I do support the initiative. The issue I have is being asked to support something when it's kind of a rush-through type of scenario. And the second issue is staff isn't supporting this. So I don't think I've ever supported something that staff wasn't in support with, simply because when I look at who prepared this report, when senior staff members aren't comfortable with it, I have a hard time being comfortable with it. But on that note, my question is, through you, Mr. Chair, to either Mr. Brady or Mr. Kernahan, has any of the information that you heard tonight changed your position in this regard?
Through you to the councillor. I'm glad to hear this evening that the Azaris have agreed that if the proposal goes through, that there would be a site plan agreement, and a public consultation. And that's great. My problem is that to truly have public consultation, it's something that should occur prior to a decision of council, not something that occurs after a decision of council. So that would be great that it might help in terms of perhaps doing some of the issues associated with the site plan. I have to take them at their word that they would, in fact, go through the site plan and the site plan agreement. I think Mr. White is underestimating the issues associated with landscaping and the drainage on the property, so that there, as the mayor has identified, there are likely to be some fairly significant issues that would need financial backing to ensure that they go in place. But having, overall, no, I think that in the future, people who want to put in solar farms should actually come into the council or come to the staff and volunteer to do the work in advance. And then we could go to council with a much more assurance that the neighbors are at least aware of it, because as it was explained this evening, the applicants have not even spoken to any of their neighbors as of yet, and they're the only way that they might be aware of it would be through the press.
Thank you.
Questions? Your Worship.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been somewhat perplexing, and in my mind, I've conjured up the notion that these particular proponents are not dissimilar to the individual who decides to build his or her own house. They don't have necessarily a wealth of background or the expertise, and they come to staff and looking for staff's help. We as a council have adopted a strategy that encourages our staff to be helpful. And I must say, and I spoke to Mr. Kernahan earlier today and complimented him on the quality of the report that he put together on very short notice under great strain, which certainly was unfair. And I want to point out that this work was not done without sacrifice to other work that would have been done during the time that both Mr. Kernahan and Mr. Hayworth would have been spending on other work that other people had an expectation they'd be moving forward. So there was some cost there, regardless. So the challenge in my mind is, do we treat the do-it-yourselfer any differently than the professional who comes in and knows this down pat? We don't. And I think the fact that we have tried to fast track this so that we could get the information and try to inform ourselves, and staff has put in a lot of effort, is an indication that we do try to treat all of the people that come to the town hall here wanting to do business in the same fashion. On the policy side, it's puzzling to me that we would, in our official plan, say that we promote renewable energy projects. On one hand, on the other hand, we qualify that by saying that we don't feel comfortable with this these ground-based solar panels because we don't have any ability to control what's going on, and we have no policy framework or other technical rationale in order to support it. Well, that's a chicken and egg scenario, because there never will be a need for a policy framework or technical rationale, because the province says it's none of your business. Municipalities, this is none of your business. We don't care. As long as they comply with what we say they need to do, you're not part of it. But if you support the proponent, we'll give them priority points so that moves them up a little bit on the list. So it's a really, I don't think it's devious. I think it's a disingenuous process by which the province is trying to do this. And they put municipalities somewhat in the middle so that proponents like the Fazaris come forward and say, we would like you to give us a resolution that says that you support this so we can get our priority points so that we can go forward, so that we'll be on the same level as anybody in Welland that wants to put up a solar panel, because Welland's done a blanket resolution. If you're in Welland and you want to put in solar panels on the ground, it's your priority points automatically. And apparently they don't care about a policy framework or financial or technical rationale. as long as the regulations and the rules of the IESO have been complied with. So I'm going to accept staff's recommendation this evening because I'm not comfortable with moving this forward, this particular project, but I'm really not thinking that we are actually facilitating renewable energy projects, as the official plan says, when we can say, except you've got to do stuff that the IESO says you don't do, and the way we're going to get you to do it is we'll give you priority points. But even at that, I don't know what our way forward would be. So I would hope that staff would maybe give some consideration to this now that we're in the middle of it, now that our best planning minds have had to direct their attention to this and now have a little bit more knowledge than they did before. I hope that they will look at this and maybe give us some advice as to how, as part of our growth and prosperity agenda, we take advantage of opportunities of this nature. But for tonight, I'm going to support the staff's recommendation, and the Fazaris can move forward, or they can come back on another occasion when things are better organized and we've got something more focused in terms of whatever our policy framework might be.
Councilor Roberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I, for one, am not going to support staff's recommendation, simply for the fact if we look at where this all started and when it was brought forward to us, we were told, well, you know, we don't have any control over it. We don't have a setback that we can work on. No, we don't have the setback, but it's built into the FIT contract. The setback is built in. I would wonder that staff would even change the 20-meter setback if that's what they were allowed to do, because the province puts it in there. It's a minimum of 20, a maximum of 100-meter setback. The Fazaris come forward and they say, well, we'll give you 30 meters. So if we break it down and look at what it is staff is telling us that they have no control over, the Fazaris and their planner have stood in front of us tonight and said, we'll comply to those things. Although it's not required, we will sit down, we will have public consultation, we'll give you a site plan, we'll give you setbacks. So we are getting what we want. We don't have the framework in our policy and in our official plan to put it there, but it was never brought to our attention in the first place. And I don't know that the Fazaris should be penalized for something that we didn't have in our site plan. I mean, I heard the questions, when did you become aware of this? Well, when was staff aware of the fact that FIT programs were available? And did they look into the FIT programs and realize that, you know, we don't have any framework here to comment on these things? So if something comes forward, we end up in the position that we are in tonight. And we're looking at this and we're saying, well, who do we support? If we support alternative energy, right, in this town, and it's listed in our official plan, then we move forward and we support it. There's no guarantee that the Fazaris are going to be accepted with their program. And like Mr. White says, if they don't do what we agreed that they would do, we could simply withdraw our support and we could report them to the province. The province could revoke their application. Alexandra Fazari explained to us about the province coming in at any time and visiting their site and making sure that they're compliant. And I'm sure that if there was any complaints from the Fazaris to the province, that the province would investigate it and look into it. So, you know, we heard last week of, you know, CN and they're being very good corporate citizens and stuff. And I'm sure that the Fazaris would be good corporate citizens as well. If you look at what they've proposed, They're going to have the screening. They're going to give us everything that we would require if it was going to be rooftop. We get setback, you'd have site plan, you'd have everything. And going back to site plan with the rooftop units, the site plans that we have in place in this town for those buildings that we discussed last week were site plans when the building was built, not site plans in regards to solar panels on the rooftop. So I'm not going to support council's or staff's recommendations, and I'm hoping that the rest of council will support the Fazaris and give them their priority points. Thank you.
Councilor Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through you. First of all, I just want to say to Mr. Kernahan, it's a great report, and Mr. Hayward for putting in the amount of effort that it took to put this together on such short notice. It's gratefully appreciated. And I thought it was very informative. I read it a few times, and there were some things that really stood out to me. The back and forth, first of all, the unwillingness to provide a site plan or to agree to a site plan or negotiate to have a site plan after you award it. The fact that the deadline is not true deadline, that there is an opportunity for another deadline in January to give us a little bit more time to do something. I agree with Councillor Lubberts on, in one respect, that we as a council, we as a municipality should be a little bit more pragmatic, perhaps a little bit more aggressive in how we look at green energy and how we invite it into our municipality. You know, the perfect opportunity would have been in 2006 when we initiated the first tower manufacturer for windmills. That would have been an opportune time. We missed that boat, but going forward, we should be able to look at that and perhaps have something in place so that this doesn't happen, and maybe offer a blanket resolution just as Welland does. At this point, I won't be supporting your request. I will be supporting staff's recommendation. You know, one last comment. When you stood in front of us tonight and you said that you hadn't gone to the neighbors either to ask them for their support, that kind of made me feel a little bit uncomfortable as well, that they didn't know that that was going on. So you have an opportunity, I think. You haven't missed the boat. You have a January opening, and you probably could submit then. Or you can submit now and take your chances as well.
Further comments? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In my mind, no never means no. It just means not right now. And I'm not prepared to go forward with this right now. And I always try to base decisions on the policy or the principles and not the people. Because if it was based on the people, I'd be voting yes regardless tonight. But the fact is that proponents could get something to a certain stage and flip the property to somebody else, and all the best intentions are gone out the window. We just went through this with the cell phone towers, and the one detriment that we heard loud and clear was lack of consultation. And you can't have consultation after the fact. We've already approved it as a municipality, and I know that there's mechanisms that we could draw on to get that retracted. The likelihood of that process actually playing out, I think, are small. I'm hoping that you take the words of council and staff tonight and come back in a year if January is not a proper intake time, but, you know, reach out, do that consultation, have some further conversations with staff regarding site plan provisions and things along that nature. But just based on what I've heard on issues where the province is steering the ship and we have limited opportunity for consultation, we should be taking whatever minute consultation we do have and utilizing it. And we do have something. We do have those 2 points that we can utilize to tell proponents this is our consultation process in the town of Fort Erie. We require site plan approval ahead of time. And if you do A, B, and C, we will consider a municipal resolution in support to get those points. And I think we should leverage that. And it's hopefully over the next 8 to 10 months, staff can take a look to Mayor Redekop's points. And so we're not in a reactive position going forward, because I definitely don't want to have to be saying no to these individuals a year from now if they choose to pursue this for the same reasons that I'm saying no tonight. And it's regrettable, but I will be saying no tonight. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll call the question. All in favor? Opposed, if any? Carry.
Thank you very much. That takes us to scheduling of meetings. Are there any meetings that anyone wishes to inform us about? Councilor Zanko?
Yes, Your Worship. We have a Court of Revisions meeting this Wednesday here at Town Hall in Conference Room 1 at 6 o'clock.
Okay. Councilor Passero?
Thank you, Your Worship. An opportunity to meet Santa.
Yes.
Saturday at noon. My last opportunity to squeeze this in on a council agenda. A lot of people have worked very hard, so we're looking forward to the parade. Starts at the racetrack at noon. Henrietta, Central, Jarvis, ends at Clouk. Hope to see you there. Thank you.
Any other meetings? Councilor McDermott.
I have an EDTC meeting on Wednesday, November 23rd, and I will be one of Santa's elves on Saturday.
Oh, now that's a scary proposition. Councilor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to remind everybody that in Ridgeway on Friday, November 25th, we'll be starting up the Spirit of Christmas with the tree lighting ceremony in the gazebo.
Anyone else? Pardon? Mic's on? Yeah, mine's always on. Oh, he's getting ready. He's anticipating. He's going to where the puck will be. Councillor Nutt.
The Council and Committee for the Town of Fort Erie hereby adjourns at 8:47 p.m.
All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried.